welcome to Unapologetic Live. I'm your host, Amla Benobi. We got Taylor here as well.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Today, the subject matter of this episode is not exactly a fun one, which is why you didn't get to my very excited opening to the show today. We're going to be talking about the events that happened in Uvalde, Texas, with this recent school shooting. An elementary school was entered by an 18-year-old male and shot up. I believe he only was able to get into one classroom, luckily, but what has happened is that 19 kids and two adults have died in the wake of what is a horrible and terrifying thing for somebody to do. And I heard the news of this yesterday, and it actually came out right before we were supposed to do the show. So we had no show yesterday just because it very much felt strange putting on a show for you guys as we heard news like this. This is, I believe, the second largest shooting of this caliber, only second to Sandy Hook, that was perpetrated by Adam Lanza. So first, before we get into all the different discussions that we're going to have around this topic in particular, because as you know, as I said, these things tend to be politicized fairly quickly as soon as they hit the media. Everybody has their take on it. Everybody has something to say. So first, let's put out the facts here. Apparently, the perpetrator in this case is 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, and he shot his grandmother before driving to his local elementary school and going to attack these children and teachers there. As far as background information for this man, he's a high school dropout, apparently described as a loner with very little friends, very little family connection, no father seemingly present in the life. And he's known to be bullied, A, for wearing eyeliner, apparently, at school, and some have speculated wearing girls' clothing to school, things like that, and for having a lisp. So I imagine all of these things brought together is not an ideal upbringing for an individual, and that is in no way to discount the horrifying, terrible things that this person has perpetrated and has done in the wake of this attack. But we need to talk about things that could happen in someone's upbringing or background that could contribute to an attack like this. Apparently, he is dead, is deceased. It's been confirmed by the media, and they think that he was actually killed by an off-duty patrol, border patrol officer who went into the school alongside other police officers and ended up taking Salvador Ramos's life. I want to say first and foremost that it feels weird to even come to you guys and say, let's talk about this situation, because I will never understand what this is like, especially for the families that are directly affected by this, the kids who have gone through this experience, people who survived this experience are going to have trauma based on this for the rest of their lives. I imagine indefinitely, this is something that they will carry with them forever. And to come forth after something like this that we know very little about at this moment as far as motivation, what could have caused something like this, and to come with definitive commentary on it, I think is something virtually impossible. And it's been amazing to me to watch as this has happened, and a lot of these commentators come out and they say they know exactly how to fix this. They've got the prognosis, the diagnosis, the prescription, everything that's going to happen. And so confident about something that we know very little about and have such trouble even fathoming. For me, this is something so horrible and terrifying that I cannot fathom an idea like this even crossing my mind, let alone think about somebody going out and actually doing this. So I want to start with that. Beware of anybody who says they have a definitive answer for why these things happen or a definitive solution for how to stop them from happening. And a lot of pointed fingers have happened in the wake of this, of course, as things get politicized in this polarized and divisive world that we live in now. Everybody loves to point fingers and place the blame on others. And if we really did that, okay, which we are doing right now, and we graphed out all the fingers that are being pointed at everybody, everybody would have one pointed at them. And that's something that we need to discuss. There's also people who say this is the act of one person who is solely evil, and we bear no responsibility for it. Our society, it's not our problem. But that doesn't seem to be the case here when we look at all the different factors that might contribute to somebody doing something like this. It seems like this is in part something that we need to take responsibility for as a society and a culture. And of course, we have the dreaded gun debate that comes up after any sort of mass shooting of this caliber, of this size, and we will talk about all the different arguments surrounding that. What I want to do today and focus today's program on is talking about this from all the different perspectives that people have on this, because this is a tragedy. This is horrifying. And I feel as though the wave of something horrifying like this truly does affect everybody. And there will be people who grandstand and use this as a means to push forward their own political agenda and push forward their own fame, get people's votes, get people's support. But I think most people are just looking at something like this and going, this is disgusting. And I cannot imagine being a parent and sending my kid to school and getting this call and not knowing what's happening and not going on. And I this morning was asked to do a news interview on Newsmax, I believe, and go on a panel. And it was to discuss something like Walmart canceling their Juneteenth ice cream or Alec Baldwin coming and giving commentary about a fight that got filmed at an airport that's now some viral video. And when something like this happens, even though it has not happened to you, it's just happened in your world, in your scope of knowledge, it feels hard to even talk about anything else and discuss that. And I went in this morning just going, how are you going to ask me about Juneteenth ice cream at a moment where this is happening in the background? And it's what's interesting to me is that when things like this happen, as much as there is divisiveness and polarity and a lot of argument around this, it all comes from, I hope, the place of people being disgusted by something like this and wanting to unite and wanting to stop it. If I have faith in anything, it's that I believe that most people on either side of the aisle of this debate are acting in the interest of other people. And that they want to be compassionate, and that hopefully they want these things to end. And there are logical arguments to support both sides of the aisle. Those who say this is a call for extreme gun control, and those who say, no, I really value the Second Amendment. I don't think those laws work. I don't think those laws have an effect on a mass shooting such as this. So I hope that's where we're all functioning right now. And I do want all of your thoughts in the comments down below. Let me know how you're feeling about this situation. What was your initial thoughts? Is this an emotional time that we should not be making major decisions like legislation? I've heard people say that this is the worst time to go and try to affect change on a matter like this because it's so emotional. Or is it the exact time that we should be doing something like this, because a moment like this sparks concern for everybody and it brings everybody to the table to have this discussion? Let me know in the comments down below. I put out a community post where you guys commented. I collected some of your thoughts on that, and we will discuss that during the show. Now, let's get into the gun control debate that people are having around this. So Salvador Ramos, the man who perpetrated this horrific attack, used, I believe, what is described as an AR-15 style rifle. I don't believe it was actually the Armalite rifle, but that's what the news is saying. And when things like this happen, I can see how your initial reaction would be, okay, if we had fewer guns, something like this would not occur. This young man did obtain his guns legally, it seems, on his 18th birthday. That seems to be the first purchase that he made, and it would have been quite an expensive purchase, I believe about $4,000 to get the guns that he got. And I imagine, as is per the law in Texas, he did undergo a background check. So often when these things happen, we hear people say, well, this is common sense gun reform, common sense, common sense, common sense. I'm wondering what is common sense about it, because clearly we're not in agreement on what that looks like. You hear some people call for bans, others call for background checks, which is industry standard everywhere, nearly everywhere in the United States, to get a background check in order to get a gun. And it seems like a lot of the gun control that is proposed seemingly does not stop these attacks from happening. Again, these guns were obtained legally, and he did undergo a background check, as far as my knowledge says. And now you have other people saying, no, I value the Second Amendment, and gun control is not the answer here. One, because the Second Amendment was made for us to be armed and in order to protect ourselves against a possibly tyrannical government. Others argue for self-protection. Others argue for recreational uses like hunting. But the very basis of the Second Amendment is to protect from the prospect of a tyrannical government and to uphold what is meant to be a free state. Now, I personally am on the side of very much being pro Second Amendment, but thinking there should be gun control in our nation in the form of background checks. I think often in the form of psychiatric evaluation, which is something that we can talk about as well. It's a hoop that a lot of people maybe are not willing to jump through in order to get a firearm. But I think there should be gun laws that function as a safeguard from people like Mr. Ramos being able to be armed. I think he was known to have had mental illness. Also, he was not able or was not supposed to have a firearm in his household because his grandfather is a felon and felons cannot have firearms present in their household. So there were laws broken in this case. But the psychiatric component of this is seemingly very important when we look back at other perpetrators of mass shootings, very similar to this one. People like Adam Lanza, people like Nicholas Cruz, people like James Holmes who have committed these acts of mass murder. Mental illness is always a factor, and it's always something that has been documented in the past of these individuals and is seemingly well known by not only their family, but the community at large. So that's where I tend to stand on gun control. I don't think it's a massive free-for-all where everybody should be able to get whatever they want, but I'm certainly not on the side of retracting and changing the Second Amendment and changing what is a freedom dictated by our founding fathers that we are meant to have. But what I've heard and listened to, I listened to Russell Brand do a talk about this morning and his thoughts on it, is that it's really not helpful to come into these situations, these political talks, and go, I feel exactly like what I told you I felt. I am pro gun control, or I am anti-gun control, and that's where I'm going to stand, and I'm just going to stand here and defend that point until the cows come home, because that's what I believe and that's where I'm at. I want everybody to have and to take the effort to understand why somebody would think differently than you, and then we can talk about what is logical in a case like this and what will actually affect change to the degree that things like this stop happening. I think for those of you who are very pro gun control or what you would call common sense gun control, although we need to define what that actually means, think about why somebody might be pro Second Amendment, not just because it was based in our founding and it's something that's foundational to our country and the ideas that created the republic that we live in, but maybe because that person has a certain distrust for our institutions and government at large. And what sort of culture or society or government are we under that would foster such distrust, that somebody feels the need to be armed for the prospect of a tyrannical government or somebody coming to oppress them? That's a major factor there and something that we can't just ignore. People feel distrust for a reason. People feel they need the Second Amendment for a reason. We should try to understand that. Not only that, we live in a society where it's hard to even trust your community members, the people who live near you, your neighbors, the people in your city. I certainly do not feel comfortable or protected here living in Los Angeles. It's a very dangerous place to live, even though we have one of the most extensive police departments in the nation. It does not feel safe. And that can be a reason for somebody wanting to arm themselves or having an attachment to the idea of firearm ownership. That's something that I want people who are very pro-gun control to understand. On the other side of the coin, people who are very pro-Second Amendment and anti-gun control legislation, understand how viscerally emotional it is to watch something like this happen, to see it play out not only once, but several times, and have the mechanism through which these attacks are taken out be a firearm. Of course, if you see that, you're going to go, firearms need to be lessened here in this country. I think it's pretty much common sense, should be common knowledge, that if you decrease the amount of firearms and limited people's access to firearms, that gun deaths can decrease. Now, there's very much a lot of argument when it comes to this subject matter. We did have a gun reform bill that I believe was passed in 2004, but there was already a decline in homicides and violent crime happening at the time, and that decline continued. So whether or not you can speak to the legislation being a factor in that is arguable, which is why we are constantly having arguments about these things. But that's something that we need to understand from both sides, and hopefully understand that we all do not want to see this happen again. We don't want to see this happen again. The people who are on the opposing side to whatever it is that you believe are not on the side of wanting to see more death, of wanting to see more anguish, that of which we cannot imagine. But we have to understand what the trade-offs are. For those who want really extreme gun control, the trade-off is this future prospect of not having freedom, of having to deal with tyrannical and oppressive forces, and not being armed in a way that you can defend yourself. We've seen this play out in several countries, South Africa to be an example, China to be an example. There have been several instances that a government has engaged in taking guns back from citizens and then has subsequently oppressed those citizens in a manner that does lead to anguish, lack of freedom, and to death. So that's what we're looking out for when we defend our Second Amendment. Now, people who defend the Second Amendment, you have to understand that in many ways your defense of firearm ownership, especially those who are not for any form of gun control, your defense is the trade-off of present anguish, of losing lives in the here and in the now. So that's something that you have to discuss. Everything is a trade-off that we need to understand. Now, what I'm for is having discussions about what stops instances like this happening. You have an 18-year-old male who on his birthday went and legally purchased firearms. You have the underlying knowledge that he does have mental illness, although clearly he must not have been on any FBI watch list or anything like that because he'd gone through a background check to get these firearms. What can we do as a nation to stop that man from obtaining a firearm? And if we can, what stops the inner turmoil and the anguish that that person feels that leads them to committing such an attack? If we lessen firearms in this nation or put a stronghold on who can and cannot own one, are we doing anything, in effect, to end the cultural and mental and physical problems that are contributing to the amount of turmoil that leads somebody to do something like this? For me, when I look at a situation like this, the gun is a mechanism. It's what is used to, what he used to portray and to externalize his internal anguish, his internal turmoil, his disillusion with the current world that he's living in. If you get rid of the firearm component of this, what is the next tool that somebody would use to do that? And it says to me that although, of course, we have to have discussions about gun control, because you have to talk about the tool that's used to commit these attacks, what is even more important is to talk about mental health, to talk about family structure, to talk about having safeguards for recognizing people who show the warning signs of committing an attack like this, because this is not new. I actually went and looked at previous mass shootings that had happened in the United States. And when I saw this story pop up, before I had even read any article, I had a number of ideas in my brain. One, that this is probably a young male. Two, that his family life is probably not, does not have a very strong structural component to it. Three, that there is most likely an element of mental illness and an element that has probably been assessed before because it was so extreme. And four, maybe this person had experienced bullying, was a loner of some sort, does not have any strong friendships, structural outside of family life. And this seems to be the checklist for nearly every single young man who commits a mass murder like this, not to mention drug use, alcoholism, the use of SSRIs that have been prescribed by medical professionals as a means to help whatever underlying mental illness they have. So if we can recognize this, if I, somebody who literally knows nothing, am just a 21-year-old girl who sees these situations plays out and goes, okay, before I even read this story, I can probably tell you a little bit about the person who committed this. Why are we not doing something about that? Why can we recognize these structures that seem to be ever present in every single instance of mass violence like this? And why are we not talking about it? Like I said, with this particular man, no friends, seemingly, no girlfriend, no family, or at least the family structure that he did have was not a strong one whatsoever. I don't imagine you shoot to kill. She's still alive and still with us, luckily. But shoot your grandmother and in love I don't imagine that is what you do, especially with the other components of bullying as well. That's something that we need to talk about. And this is common. So let's talk about other mass shooters who are similar to Salvador Ramos. Adam Lanza, who committed the Sandy Hook tragedy, the only one bigger than the one that we're talking about today, killed his mother before going in and committing the assault against those children at Sandy Hook, and was also known to have extreme mental illness. And people were aware of this. The community was aware of this. Dylan Roof, who went and shot up a church in Charleston, had divorced parents and a very unstructured household, had very much known mental illness and was known to abuse drugs. James Holmes, who shot up the Aurora movie theater, known mental illness, extreme mental illness, and attempted suicide in his youth. Nicholas Cruz, who committed the Parkland tragedy in the state of Florida that I was from, and I was there when it happened. I was an activist at the time. I went and did a speech at March for Our Lives talking about a ban on assault rifles, which I believe we need to do a whole different episode on gun control, all the different arguments and myths that fly around surrounding that, and we'll discuss that a little bit today. But Nicholas Cruz of Parkland, his father died right in front of him, and that was an experience that he had in his youth. He had known extreme mental illness, social media presence that showed how concerning his behavior was, killing animals, posting videos of his guns, and posting his pictures of himself in tactical gear, referring to himself as the Annihilator. We see very similar actions from this man, Salvador Ramos. He would post pictures of his guns on the internet. He sent those guns to sent the pictures of the guns to a girl that he was following on Instagram and tagged her in it and asked her to share the photos of what he was doing. He exchanged Facebook messages before his attack, talking about how he was going to shoot up an elementary school, clearly has signs of a broken family and mental illness. So if we have, again, this structured view of what a perpetrator of an act like this looks like, why are we not talking about mental health? Now, I see there's a lot of things I want to address. I'm honestly just going to be rambling about the different things that I've seen in relation to this. I've written out some stuff, but I just feel the need to just talk about all the different things that I've seen and give you what is my perspective on it and hear yours as well. But what I dislike is the people who come to the table of this discussion and say, well, this is simply just evil. This is an evil act committed by an evil person, and evil is going to exist. That, to me, insinuates that there's no cause for this, that this person was just monstrous, probably from the day they were born. It's a gene, it's genetic, it's just evil. But we know there are markers. We know there are things that happen in childhood and in early development and at school that are contributing to these things. And the state of our public schools is not great at all. I imagine that's a contributing factor as well. It's said that Ramos dropped out of school in what seems to be the wake of COVID, when the schools were shut down and he wasn't attending. He left school then. Another factor that seems to be contributing to a lot of the stuff that's happening right now is education, in the form of education and not having a structured regimen for your life. But I find it hard to believe that this is just evil. People are led to commit acts like this. And we know, because it seems that as though they are so similar. People are led to things. So we can say this is just the act of one person, or it's just evil people who pick up firearms and do these things, but why? We have to discuss why. And it seems as though, as a culture, we have in a lot of ways abandoned young men through how we teach, the way that we view masculinity, the way that we view youth in our country, fatherlessness in this country, the excess amount of just mind-numbing content and things that we see on social media. There are so many things that I feel like contribute to the decline of our current culture, and young people are just here consuming it day in and day out. And to see those young people become disillusioned, not have an avenue to express that, and to then commit an act like this, it's horrible to say, but it does not surprise me with the state that we're in right now. It does not surprise me. And unfortunately, with the way the media covers this, and I think we are getting better at maybe not highlighting so much the face of this person and talking about comparing it to other mass shooters and doing in a way that's not helpful, creating sort of fame around acts like this. I think a lot of young men or the young men that are at risk of committing an act like this are struggling with that underlying mental illness or feeling lonely in their lives and see this as the way to just be infamous. This instant amount of fame, even through this horrible route of going and killing people, is something that is attractive to young men who are in a place like this in their life, even if it means losing their life, which in this case happened. They see this as just going out with a loud crash and being able to express all the anguish and turmoil that they've been feeling inside. I could be wrong about that, but that seems to be what is happening here. Now, more than anything, like more than statements of fact or being able to say this is how we fix this, I have questions, and this has raised more questions for me than anything that's happened in really a long time. And I started writing these out, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on this. Do you think that there is somebody to blame in this? We saw Beto O'Rourke go and interrupt Governor Abbott's press conference about this and say that he's the one to blame for this, that it was his inaction that caused this to happen. Do you think that's good? Do you think that's true? Do you think that's a means through which we can solve these problems? Because to me, putting blame or onus on anybody specifically in this case is not helpful at all. I think this is something that we actually carry as a collective for how much we've allowed our culture to degrade itself, our families to be completely ruined, our public education system to not be a safe haven for children anymore. So is there somebody to blame? If you think there is, who are you blaming in this? What do you think we need to do? I'm wondering what creates such inner turmoil in a person that they would commit something like this, because it is horrific enough to the fact that I cannot fathom having this thought even cross your mind, let alone following through with an act like this and planning it out and being strategic about this. When we remove guns from a situation like this, have we simply just removed the mechanism and not really taken care of the actual situation at hand? Does a gun become something else? As we've seen happen in other countries like France and the UK, where major restrictions have been placed on guns, and then guns become knives and fires and things like that, and other forms of attack that people use to express whatever it is that they are feeling inside. Because we'll get into some of the gun debate and people thinking that a gun ban is going to solve this. I'm not in that particular pool of thought. Not because I'm ideologically subservient to what people who are conservative tend to feel, but just because I have not found evidence that proves that this is the thing to do. And I fear that just getting rid of them, it creates another mechanism for people to go and commit and act like this. I imagine they'd be much less successful using another weapon, and that's a discussion that we can also have. But again, I just feel it's going to be replaced. And another question that I sort of had is just when a tragedy like this occurs, it seems as though in that moment, everybody has sort of this clarity and this unity about life and how important it is, and having these discussions, even if it's in the form of argument. Why are we not carrying this out in our daily lives? Suddenly we recognize when things like this happen, what's important to us, what needs to be talked about and what doesn't. And I wish we carried that through us and in our daily lives. And I don't know why we don't, and I even fall victim to this, talking about stupid things, having dumb conversations, getting overly emotional about things that do not deserve your time and the energy that your life has given you. And moments like this really bring clarity to that of, why am I doing this? Why am I talking about this? Time could be better spent doing this and that. And if you get nothing out of this other than that, that's fine by me. Value the life that you have, value the time that you have, and act as if it's... sounds weird to say, but act as if something like this is happening. And you need to value the people who are near you. You need to value your life. You need to value your words and the things that you do and the energy that you put into the world. Because at the end of the day, this tragedy has happened. Nothing that we do after this is going to stop what has occurred. It's not going to stop the anguish of these families, of this community. It's not going to take back anything that has happened. So what can you do in your life moving forward that makes it meaningful, that makes it worth something? I want to talk about some of your comments on the community post that we put out. I put out a community post saying, just wondering how you guys felt when you heard this news, wondering any arguments that you might have, Have you gotten in any conversations with people about how we handle this moving forward? This first one is from Rachel. She says, hits close to home, an event that shouldn't be manipulated for political gain like politicians. She specifically calls out Beto and Biden. We can talk about other politicians that might have done that as well, have already done. More gun laws aren't going to solve the illegal and horrific use of guns. Americans really need to check their values and morals. Now, there are parts of this that I do agree with. We do need to check our values and our morals because this is not okay. And I know some people will say, well, this doesn't happen anywhere but in America, but there are other countries that experience rates of violent crime like this, and clearly they have a problem too, but we have a problem that something like this is happening specifically to young elementary school children. Now, but these guns were obtained legally, so we have to talk about what we can do as a nation to make sure that people like this aren't obtaining guns. And it does beg the question, if he couldn't obtain them legally, would he have obtained them illegally? I find it hard to believe that not being able to do something through the regular channels is going to stop you from doing what you ultimately want to do. I want to put out a few facts here before we move on to the next one in regards to gun control. I was watching Steven Crowder, and he sort of talked about a lot of the myths that are surrounding it, and it's stuff that I didn't know either. 94% of mass shootings happen in gun-free zones. I believe this school in particular was labeled as a gun-free zone, and it does make it a strong target for an attack like this. Should we have security guards on school campuses? Should we bulletproof windows in our schools? It's a horrible thing to have to even think about. Metal detectors at schools. Should all school doors be locked? Should you have to have a key card to be able to attend school? Should you be a verified person who's able to be on a campus? Are we in a sick society that we even have to have a discussion about the sort of safety measures that we need to put on elementary schools? Another stat that Steven Crowder shared was that more lives are actually far more lives are saved by firearms here in this nation than taken. For just stats on that, if any of you guys are interested, guns used defensively in the United States, it's about 1.67 million times per year. Guns are used defensively in the United States in order to save a life, to protect somebody in a situation where their life is at risk. You hear often on the conservative end of things, the only people that stop bad guys with guns are good guys with guns. And it seems like, as far as numbers report, that is true. And we've heard instances where mass shootings have been stopped by fellow members of our society with firearms coming in and stopping them. There was one at a church where a man before, I believe he was only able to take one life in an instance where he intended to take many, was stopped by a fellow churchgoer who had a concealed carry. All of these mass shootings that have happened in our history have been stopped either by somebody with a gun or by law enforcement. I believe in this instance, an off-duty Border Patrol agent was the one who came to this school to save the other children that could have had their lives taken. Now, as far as gun homicides, 19,000 happened in 2020. So you're looking at 1.67 million defensive uses of a firearm versus 19,000 gun homicides. Now, some people will say that one gun homicide is too much, and that's it. And we have to assess those trade-offs. And it's horrifying to talk about the trading of prospective lives in the discussions that we have surrounding legislation in our own communities, but it is the reality. So in 2020, 19,000 people lost their lives to gun homicides, but 1.67 firearms were used in defensive measures. So you have to think about that and think about what your trade-off is in these instances. So that was just some of the facts shared by Steven. We're going to move on to another person who commented on this community post. Michael's opinion was far too many respond to isolated violations of individual rights by demanding universal violations of everybody's individual rights. And in ways, this can and is extremely true. You hear about a story like this, like a mass shooting, and we've had several in the past few weeks now in this country. And immediately people start running towards gun control, some even saying to get rid of the Second Amendment as a means to stop this from happening. And all of it, I hope, is from a good place. But we have to think about the prospect of individual rights and how important they are to us and what those trade-offs are. So constantly think about that. And do we infringe upon what is now the right of American citizens who are law-abiding citizens, who acquire their guns legally, who use their guns as a means of protection, or if not protection, just as their exercising of their own Second Amendment? Is that a right that you're willing to infringe on as a means to stop things like this from happening? And when you do infringe upon that right, does it stop things from happening? That's the major issue, because when we're looking at states right now, California, the state that I'm currently sitting here talking to you in, we have some of the strictest gun control legislative measures of any state in this union. Yet our gun violence is through the roof. It is unbelievable the amount of people who are dying, staring down the barrel of a gun in this state. We have some of the most restrictive gun laws. So is what you're advocating for actually going to bring about the change that you are trying to change? When we talk about intellectuals and policymakers and legislators, it's not about intent, guys. The intent is there. We all want to see this stop. It's not about intent. It is about result. It is about what your actions result in. And if you go and infringe on people's rights and not have the result that you intended come forth, you have done something wrong and you need to reassess. But if we can't have the discussion, we can't get there. Next comment is from Low Key Mystic. I feel like my heart just got ripped out. I still do. I feel the pressure to homeschool my babies and that I'm faced with this conviction. They're staying home with me. How sad is that? How sad is that we live in a country where people are not comfortable sending their kids to school, where we are having discussions about bulletproofing windows and Kevlar and having student resource officers, which is now going to be a discussion where I hope that's where it ends. I went to a school with a student resource officer who was armed. I believe we had two of them on campus. If we are living in this reality right now and we have not yet put forth the brain power to fix these instances from happening, we need to have proactive measures. And a proactive measure would be having all the doors locked and making that a law for public schools, having people have key cards in order to be able to enter these schools, having people bypass through administration or a metal detector in order to be able to enter an elementary school. It clearly should not be this easy for people to get onto a campus and to inflict this amount of harm on young children. Next comment. Jay Green expressed simply what I just said. This wouldn't have happened if they had armed guards or teachers instead of a gun-free zone sign. We can speculate as to whether or not it would have happened. Parkland had student resource officers, and guess what occurred on that campus? Kids were shot and kids were killed. So armed guards, I think, betters your chances of having somebody feel a little less inclined to enter the school and do something. But again, we have to fix the root of the problem and stop individuals like this from being created. They are created. It's not just evil that comes out of nowhere. It's created. And we seem to have somewhat of a grasp on how. So how do we fix those issues? Now, in the meantime, while these things are happening and these individuals are still being created through the cultural problems that we have, armed guards is something to talk about on school campuses. Cannot believe it. It's a discussion that we have to have in the free world, in one of the greatest countries on this planet. But we have to talk about armed guards on our public school campuses. Now, what I thought was interesting, and I don't really want to give too much voice to, but so many of you in the comments had brought up things like MK Ultra and this idea that this is a conspiracy theory, that actually the government is involved in the creation of people like this who go out and commit these horrific acts on schools, and that it actually helps them to garner votes and support in this coming midterm election and to fan the flames of what is already a very divisive fire that is brewing and continues to in this country. And more so than anything, than giving voice to the conspiracy or that idea that the government has a hand in this, I want to point out how much distrust one would have to have in their country and in their government to think something like that. And would it be surprising that that very same person truly values the Second Amendment and wanting to be armed against a government that they truly think could be out to take the lives of their children? Where are we at as a society that people, and not just a small group of people, but a large group of people harbor that much mistrust in their government, that they would go as far as to kill their own citizens or to create the own situation where its youngest, most vulnerable citizens are killed? I want to understand having that amount of mistrust. And I can see with things that have happening, things that have happened in the past, how somebody could maybe have that amount of mistrust. But that's, again, another point to trying to understand why people might have a different perspective than you. One last comment here before I think we close out today's show with ending comments. 2296 Kate says, it's horrific, but honestly, I was not surprised by the news. These shootings happen far too often, but they've been happening for decades, and nothing has been done to prevent school shootings and protect children. We need armed security in every public school. Every door in a public school must be locked during school hours and checked every hour. And people should have to show ID and be buzzed into public schools in more dangerous areas. The fact that we don't have armed security at every public school after so many shootings across decades is proof that our elected officials on both sides of the aisle care more about agendas and votes than actually protecting children from being killed in school shootings. Ultimately, these measures would not solve the problem, though they could certainly deter potential shooters and save more lives. The problem everyone should be addressing contains multiple issues that should be top priorities: fatherless homes, drugs, and mental illness. They are not distractions from the problem. They are at the root of the problem. And until people address these issues, take them seriously, and promote traditional stable households with a mother and father, we can debate about that, but it seems to be a recurring factor. Take measures to reduce drug abuse and to help for the drug addicted, and properly treat mental illness, these acts of senseless evil will continue. So in the meantime, parents should pull their children from public schools and pray for our country. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, so much to think about, so much to discuss. I'm curious what you would like to see happen in the wake of something like this. What is something that is plausible? What is something that you feel like will affect change, that will stop these things from happening? Let me know down below. I am by no means capable of coming up with a solution to these problems, and I really have a certain amount of distrust for anybody who comes to the table and says they know exactly how to fix it, and they know exactly what's happening here, and they know exactly why we're in the state that we're in. There's a lot of, it's the confidence for me, as I always say, there's a lot of confidence coming out of people who are looking at a situation that cannot be fathomed. It cannot be fathomed. And why can it not be fathomed? Because it virtually does not happen. This is an act of terror and horror larger than anything, and that's why all of our eyes are on it. So if it's something that we can't fathom in our own lives and understand, why are we coming to the table with such confidence saying we know exactly what to do and exactly how to fix it? Question that. Also, question anybody who's not willing to come to the table and have a discussion about a viewpoint that differs from their own, because clearly we do not have a handle on this situation and what's happening, and we can stay like gears trapped in a machine that absolutely will not move because nobody's willing to put oil on them, or we could put oil on them and really accept the prospect that maybe we're not absolutely correct about everything it is that we believe and everything that needs to be done in this situation. In the meantime, let's protect our kids, because these things are happening. If it means armed guards, if it means bulletproof windows, if it means locking all the doors and checking them every hour, if it means being buzzed in to your local elementary school in order to do whatever it is you need to do there, do it. Do it. Because Congress and all of our representatives and all of our elected officials are going to be meeting today in their very cushy, safe, secure, arm-guarded building. And some of them are not willing to extend that same security and that same protection to your children. So that is something to be aware of as well. Not that any of this is something that we should need. I think in my heart, it is the sign of a sick society that we have to have these structures set in place in order to stop senseless violence and the death of young people. But it's where we're at. It tis the reality. And if anything, I will be real and say it's happening and we need to do something about it. Again, give me your thoughts. If there's anywhere where you disagree with me, put that down in the comments below. Do you agree with me? Put that down in the comments below. Do you have a different action that you think we should take? Is there a different way we should be looking at this discussion and having this conversation? Let me know in the comments down below. And most of all, be with your loved ones. Hold them near and dear. Tell them that you love them. Have the conversations you've been putting off. Tell that person that you haven't told that you love, that you love them. And hold everybody close to you, because in an act of utter senselessness and violence, they might not be there anymore. And I can't imagine having that be the reality. And I know that there are, 22 families right now who have that reality and are having those discussions and are having to face all the things in life that they did not do. And some of them have lost their children, an unimaginable loss in life that I wish upon no one, not even my worst enemy. So that's today's show. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, where we get to see you and hopefully talk about subject matters that are a lot more positive, enlightening, and educational than this one in particular. Love you guys. Can't wait to see you tomorrow and have another discussion. And thank you so much for watching. See you then.